Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. I know it's not Saturday, it's Thursday, but this is an exceptional guest. I wanted to have him on because he's coming to Philly this weekend, and I thought it would be great to have him on and share his talents with you guys. That was his song, Ballet Class, and he was playing the vibraphones on that. Many people know him as a drummer, but he has a lot of other talents. And I think this is him on the line right now. Hold on a second.
Baby.
Good evening.
Joy.
Hi, Jason.
Jason Marcellus, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. We're live on the air. Thank you so much for calling in.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to talk.
I just played Ballet Class for the audience from your Music Update CD.
Oh, very good.
It's so tame, and when I see you in other interviews and things, you seem to have so much, like, just energy, almost like a volcano. You got a lot of, like, energy and movement going on inside of you. What made you write that piece, Ballet Class?
I'm sorry, you said what made me write that song?
It seemed kind of tame. Like, you seem to have a lot of energy, underlying, like, energy.
What it is is that really, I've listened to a wide range of music, and I try to have music express a lot of different sides. So, for example, you know, there's a happy side, there's a sad side, there's, you know, joyous, there's anger, there's, you know, there's a lot of things music can express. So I try to express all those things. Now, the way that Ballet Class was written was on the vibes, or the vibraphone, because the hardest scale to play is a C major scale. You'd think it's the easiest, but it's the hardest. And so I was practicing it, and then I played it in this rhythmic way, like instead of da 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 da, it was da 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 da, and then right after that, I heard this rhythm, da 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 da, bop, da da da. I thought, wait, okay, you know, because the thing about it is that, and I thought, well, man, let me put this down, because you know, in classical music, there's rhythm in that music as well, and that's something that I've studied a good bit of. So I was like, man, let me get this down. So I, you know, wrote the rhythm down. I figured out what the chords and the harmony was. And so, you know, that's just one aspect of music. That's one joyous aspect, you know. So, and I'm in tune with energy. It is a happy energy, but, you know, it's energy nonetheless.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
So really,
and I'm going to be giving – sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so, no, all I was going to say is that. So that's what that song represents. That's sort of another element to my personality.
Well, that's good. I'm going to be giving away a copy of your CD, Music Update. So if people are listening, they want to follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you want to become a fan on Facebook, just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, if you're listening, you can call in. The call-in number is 646-929-0368. You should check out Jason's website, jasonmarcellus.com. And now, people may not know this, but you started actually a long, long time ago. Playing the violin in school. Before the age of, like, say, 12.
That is correct. I was 5 years old, and my father, Pianocellus Marcellus, had some sort of deal with the elementary school. There was some kind of deal that the school was offering, you know, like in terms of a discount on violin. I forget what the deal was, but he was thinking to himself, yeah, I can't pass this one up. So I mean, he got a violin, and I actually started on the Suzuki program, and that was when I was at age 5. The drums started a year later. So, yeah, no, violin was my first instrument, along with a lots of other people. I've talked to a lot of different people that said, yeah, I started on violin. Yeah, so did I.
So what was the transition from violin to drums? I mean, when did that happen? When you were in your teens, I believe, right? You kind of moved from around 11
well,
or so?
Well, actually,
you went to
I mean, I really played both off and on, as a kid. But when I was age 12, I was in a junior youth orchestra, and it was the first orchestra that I saw with the percussion section. So growing up, I would always play in string orchestras where it's only strings, but this orchestra had a percussion section, and I sit down, and I look at the back and see drums and timpani, bass drum, snare drum. I'm like, wait a minute. Nobody told me that there was a percussion section in classical music. Why didn't anybody? And so, you know, and so when I saw that the following year, I just decided, man, that's it for violin, because I want to get into percussion. And I started to do that. I started getting, and then ironically, I started to really listen to classical music a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me play some of your drumming from your first album. That one came out in 1998. This is Hand Jiving. I want to play a little bit of this for the audience.
Sure.
That was Hand Jiving from 1998 album by Jason Marcellus, but he's moved way past that now. Did you feel any nerves doing your first album coming from such, you know, your family with such musical history and all your brothers? I mean, did you feel like, oh, my God, what am I getting myself into?
No, it's funny. I always get that question, but the answer is no. I didn't feel any pressure at all just because I have my own musical vision and so forth, and I have my own expectations that nobody else has but me. So I didn't feel that I had to live up to anything only because I loved the music. It was something that I wanted to play. It isn't something that I felt I had to do or I had to have a certain success. So it's just something I love doing. And so pressure,
No. You know what I read was interesting, that you worked with the group Los Hombres Calientes, and you didn't think the first album that you did with them as a group was that good. Talk to the audience about that experience.
And I'll tell you why, because, you know, and I'm actually realizing a few things. I've realized that in pop music and in jazz music, there's different philosophies in terms of making records. Most times pop groups, they go in and the music is brand new and they go in and they record it and they lay all the tracks down and, you know, then they tour the album. However, in most cases in jazz, guys play the music live first, and then they go in the studio after having played it. So what happened was we did the first show live at Snug, and it was great. It was successful. And all of a sudden, like that, the following Monday after the gig on Saturday, I get a phone call saying, "Yeah, we're going to make a record, and we're going to have it out before Jazz Fest." I'm like, "Wait, what?" And it's January, and Jazz Fest is the last week of April, first week in May. I'm like, "Wait a minute, man!" So we're like rushing in, recording music, and the band only did one show, and just all this stuff. And honestly, I didn't feel that it was our strongest effort because we were just getting started. And so then.
Yeah.
Then we'd start playing live, and the band would get better and better and better, and I started to hate the album more and more and more. But the second record I was more pleased with because we were able to spend more time, you know, and so forth, and you know, just develop the music, write music for it, what we want to do. And so, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the second one, but that was the reason why I wasn't the biggest fan of the first one.
Okay, and do you feel like you're a perfectionist? Do you have to do a lot of takes, or do you feel you
no,
can go in the studio
no.
and, like, okay?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, it depends. I mean, sometimes I'm like that, but most of the time, no. It's just, you know, try to get a few takes and be done with it. Because, once again, I mean, one of the things that a lot of the happened on a lot of the older records, a lot of those guys, they would do one take, and that would be it. I mean, there's a Thelonious Monk record called It's Monk's Time, and, you know, Charlie Rouse is, like, messing up the melody on some of the tunes and is practicing during the bass solo, and it all got on the record.
Right.
And that's just one example. There's hundreds of other examples of more informal things getting on record. And so, I mean, I'm not too much of a perfectionist, but in that case, it was more of the fact that we just hadn't played together, and that was it. And you know, it wasn't about how many takes we did; it's just we hadn't really played together enough. But you know, nonetheless, you know, I mean, eventually we did start to play together quite a bit.
And you like the second one? That's good. That's good. Well, I'm glad you continue to play, because definitely, I mean, both the albums have, you know, some positive qualities. I want to play a piece that you sent me. Sonnet in Search of More, with your brother, Del Feo. You played on the Sweet Thunder album for the audience, okay?
Yes.
With your brother, Delphay, and how did you decide to work on that particular album with him? Did he come to you, or you heard him working on something? Because that piece is dedicated to Ellington and Shakespeare, the album, correct?
Yes, that is correct. You know, there's an irony about that. I say there's an irony because I'm just remembering when I played on, years ago, I played on Delphio's his recital when he was a student at Berkeley, and I was about to turn 9 years old, and he got me to play drums on this recital for some of it. The only reason why I bring this up is because there is a video which no one's ever going to see. In the beginning of the video, and there's this music that's playing, and it was incredible. I was like, man, what is that? And turns out, it was Sonnet for Caesar from Duke Ellington's Such Sweet Thunder. And so, you know, many, many, many years later, Delphio did what was an updated version of Thunder. And really, he had myself, and he also had another drummer named Bernard Harper. And so, really, you know, Delph just called me because he wanted me to play on certain tunes because he was looking for specific things. And, you know, we pretty much have played together enough to where I know what it is that he wants. So, it was just, I'd like you to do this for this. Like, all right, yeah, sure. I don't want it to be this way. All right, you know, and that's, it's pretty easy to get that together.
We're just going to move on. We're going to talk a little bit about working with another great artist, John Ellis, you worked with. That's kind of a funny title, Puppet Mischief, there. Where did you come up with the idea for that song?
Yeah, John, that came from a friend of John Ellis's, a guitarist by the name of Mike Moreno. And I think the two of them, they play together quite a bit in New York, because John lives in New York. And I think the two of them were hanging out, and I think Mike Moreno just randomly said, yeah, man, it seems like you're into Puppet Mischief. John just laughed and thought, man, that's such a great name. That's such a great title. And so that ended up being the name of that record.
Okay. All right. Well, let's play a little bit there. Hopefully we'll get... Thank you. you're listening, you can call in 646-929-0368 and follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Become a fan on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm going to be giving away a copy of Jason's album, Music Update. So you want to follow and you want to become a fan, check out his website, jasonmartellus.com. Now, this Saturday in Philadelphia, you're going to be playing with a very special young lady, Nina Simone's daughter.
Yes, that is correct. Well, there's two shows. I'm actually the opening act. I'm going to be playing with my Vibes group first. So the musicians that you heard playing ballet class, they will be joining me. And then after that, Simone will have a group come on and perform. And I'm really looking forward to the show.
And is this, how many times have you been playing with her, just on and off recently?
I'm not playing with her. She has her own.
Oh, you're
group.
Doing a separate set. Okay.
Yeah, I'm
you're
doing a separate,
separate set.
It's a double bill, if you will. It's a double bill.
Okay.
But I'm
excellent.
Definitely looking
wow.
forward to the evening.
Well, that's a great ticket for people to buy. Again, he's going to be at the Annenberg Center here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. If you're looking for a great show to go check out, that's Saturday, this coming Saturday. You're going to get a great deal because the tickets aren't that expensive. Annenberg is a great place to listen to music. I've gone to tons of concerts there. So if you're in the area or if you're close to New Jersey or in New York, you want to come down and check that out. Talk to me about this thing called Jazz Nerds International. What's up with that?
Oh, yeah. Well, oh, boy, where do I even start? I guess I will start with, for me, in the year of 2000, when I was sort of mid-20s, there were musicians who were coming into New Orleans, newer guys that I started working with, and I started noticing that there was a lot about the tradition of the music that they weren't taught. There were a lot of simple, fundamental things that they weren't taught. And, I mean, they learned it after a while, but there was just, I noticed mm-hmm. that a lot of these things weren't being passed on. And as I started traveling, I started noticing at various colleges that there's these people that would play all this complex music but wouldn't be interested in the simpler things because the music is mm-hmm. really about all of that. And, you know, and it just kept in. Plus, honestly, a lot of the newer music just was not inspiring me at all. It just wasn't doing it. And so the point is this trend kept going and going, and I, you know, started to get, you know, a little frustrated by it. And I remember hearing a description from someone that said, man, you know, these people at these colleges, man, you know, they just focus on nerd music. I'm like, nerd music? That's what this is. That's what it is. Music that's all about playing fast notes, and that's it. Not
yeah.
fast notes and slow, not odd meter and
long solo. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And so I kept seeing this, and so finally, the last straw for me was when my father saw a show, and he told me the story. He went to New York to see a band. He sees this band, and it's a typical classroom kind of situation where guys are playing all these charts, and you know, the piano player is playing a lot of 60s piano, his best Keith Jarrett imitation, but warmed over without all the information. Keith Jarrett really knows the history of this music. And, you know, the saxophone player would play a solo, and he would finish and stand in the corner and look at the ground. There was no interaction with the audience whatsoever. But my father looked at the audience because he's sitting in the back of the club, and he notices that the audience is working at trying to enjoy the show.
Oh, my God.
They're not enjoying the show. They're working yeah. at trying to enjoy the show. And when he told me that, I just said to myself, I can't take it anymore. That's enough. Mm-hmm. I've had it. And what I decided to do was I started doing shows as a band leader, as I'm doing this Saturday, and I said, man, I got it. I'm going to start telling people about an organization called Jazz Nerds of America. It's all over the country, and to tell people. And then I would go to Europe, and then I'd start hearing the same stories. I would go to Europe, and there's a group called the Scandium Quartet, some guys that I work with in Denmark, Sweden, and they're amazing musicians. And I'm hearing the same stories. Students said, I only want to play abstract things. And I'm like, you mean to tell me this is Jazz Nerds International? Really? Really? That's what this is? Okay. what started the whole, so as I'm doing these shows as a band leader, I would have this story that I would tell the audience about beware, just beware. If you hear music like this, leave, go away. Do not try to enjoy. If you don't like it, just
get out,
leave the club right away. Now, what's funny was, really what I'm doing is that I was trying to tell the story to elicit a laugh from the audience, but make the musicians sweat. Because a lot of musicians are like, wait a minute. Either they're going to love it because they know it's true, or they're going to hate it because they're getting exposed. And so what took this off was I was in Canada, and I even heard stories that it happens there too. And so I did a show there and told a story, and one of the guys that was involved with booking the show said, man, could I make a video of you telling a story? I said, yeah. So the friend of his turns on the iPhone, and I just went off for 2 minutes and so forth. And, you know, thought nothing of it. You know, it went on online. And, you know, and this was in January. It went up. Like, okay, whatever. In April, I get a phone call from Marcus Roberts. You know, and I work with pianist Marcus Roberts, and we talk about whatever gigs we have coming up. And then all of a sudden in the conversation, he says, say, man, your Taz Nurse video has been getting a lot of attention. I'm like, excuse me?
Yeah.
What's going on? Yeah, man, the guys from the Los Angeles Times was telling, like, what? What are you talking about? So I went, and I was like, hold on. This is how. So I went to Google and typed in Jazz Nerds, and in the automatic fill-in, Jazz Nerds International shows up. I'm like, okay.
See, you click return.
And I see all these entries, and I'm like, okay, what is going on? And there's all these folks writing about it and all these things. And there were, of course, different interpretations of what it was that I was saying and what does this mean? And, well, you know, he's a Marcellus, you know, what that means and that nonsense. One guy, I think, tried to dub it as a jazz war, and I'm like, you're wrong. So what I decided to do was write a full essay explaining what that was all about, just saying that, you know, really, I've been noticing a trend in the music, and it still goes on, where you have people that will go to shows and they'll be bored, but they feel that they have to enjoy it because it's new music that's trying to break ground and be innovative, and they're not trying to play the same thing. They're trying to do their own thing and do something different. And meanwhile, the audience is falling asleep 10 minutes in.
Jason, can you tell the audience, so, I mean, what do you feel is a true definition of modern jazz as opposed to old school jazz?
I mean, honestly, man, modern, you know, it's funny. I was just doing some thinking about this. In fact, on Facebook, which I'm on Facebook, I just put a status, and I want to get people's thoughts on it. I said, I feel that music relevant for the time is a 20th century phenomenon, but not a 21st century phenomenon. Because in the 20th century, which, I mean, this is a very involved conversation, but to make it real brief, every decade the music changes. You know, like every decade, there's, you know, whether it's the 70s or the 50s, or there's a music that fits with that decade. So I can understand the argument of, well, you know, the music for the time. But I think in the 21st century, in my view, and this is debatable and some will disagree, and that's fine. I'd like to hear their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it applies to today. I think that any music that is played today is going to sound like 2012. I don't care if it's a record like Blue Crescent by Dr. Michael White, who plays traditional jazz. It doesn't sound like the 20s. It sounds like 2012. I don't care if it's Jason Moran's Ken. It doesn't sound like the 60s. It sounds like 2012. Or Robert Glasper's Black Radio, which just came out. That doesn't sound like the 90s. It sounds like 2012. Now, mind you, those are very different perspectives on the music. Very different perspectives, but it all sounds like 2012 or, you know, 2000. Well, they came out in different years, I think 2011, 10, but to me it all sounds like
close. Same time period, though, you're trying to say, you know?
Yeah, and I just think that the 21st century should be all about celebrating all of the music that we learned in the 20th century and using all of it.
names, and you just tell me some of the first things that come to your mind. Elvin Jones.
Oh, boy. Veen. Man, one of the masters of drums. He is a gentleman that not only had complexity in his music, but he had a hardcore swing to his playing that was just phenomenal. He played notes that were so inaccurate, meaning they're impossible to play. I mean, trying to play single strokes roll like Elvin Jones is impossible because there's a flexibility to it that's so hard to match. And so that I mean, I could go on and on talking about Elvin, actually.
Okay.
I think that I will say though that I was very privileged to, when I was in high school, open up for Elvin Jones. It's better than playing after. But I opened up,
wow.
I had my own group, and I had written music and everything. And after that, Elvin played, and it was the first time that I ever heard Elvin play live. And I said to myself, man, his playing is better than when he was recording with John Coltrane. This is ridiculous. So, yeah, I mean, it was definitely one of my top influences, without a doubt.
Yeah. How about Billy Higgins?
Billy Higgins, very beautiful spirit, had a very flexible, light but intense swing to his playing. And he was someone that I really would have liked to have known a little more. I met Higgins and hung with him a few times, but I would have liked to have known him a lot more. But there was just an understated understated aspect of his groove that was just really subtle, but it was really strong. I mean, whether it's hearing him on Sidewinder or hearing him on Ramblin' with Ornette Coleman, there's just something that's understated, but it's great.
Now, you just had, and I want to say happy belated birthday recently in
Thank
March,
you.
Your Pisces.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm Pisces, and
yes,
I'm a Pisces.
Correct.
My birthday was in February, so Pisces in the house.
Okay, indeed.
So do you feel older now? I mean, you're a young cat in terms of age. I mean, do you feel like an old cat because of all the musical influence you've had since, like, your birth, so to speak? I mean...
Not necessarily. I mean, I think it depends on who you hang around. I mean, if I hang around really young people, then I'll feel a little older. But if I'm around a lot of older musicians, I'll feel younger. But I don't think too much about that. You know, I'm just trying to actually just sort of evolve and just be a grown, responsible man that tries to represent himself in the best possible light.
Okay. What about working with the youth? I've seen a couple of things of you working with the youth. How do you enjoy that a lot? Do you plan on continuing to do that throughout your career?
Oh, I'm sorry, working with whom?
With youth, young people, and teaching them and doing work.
Oh, yeah. No, frankly, working with younger people is needed now more than ever because one of the trends that happens in music that I don't agree with is that people are now catering to teenagers. And this was a trend that there's not an exact date. It's the kind of thing that evolves over time. But I think for me, to be honest, there's always been sort of a way to try to capture the teen market. But I think that when Britney Spears' Baby One More Time hit, all of America just said, oh, cool, let's put our money there. And then, you know, next thing you know, Disney Channel's programming is like all teen and pop music is all teen, all the time. If you're over the age of 19, you're not important to us. We only care about you if you're 12. And so, you know, you have young people that's treated not like children, but like a consumer group. And quite frankly, there's a lot of things that they don't get exposed to deliberately, so they'll keep buying this product. And so now more than ever, like, the young people really need to be taught. I was at a school in Sitka, Alaska, talk about out of the way, and I was asking some young kids, you know, somebody asked, you any of you kids listen to jazz? They're like, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you listen to? Elvis Presley. Great. What record? They couldn't answer. They're like, all right, what song? Still couldn't answer. And they just said, well, you know, I heard it on Rhapsody. I'm like, oh, yeah, the server site. Yeah, I know what that is.
Big with them.
Oh, yeah, but the thing about it is that they didn't think to, and it's not just them, this is a general problem, they didn't think to look further, like, it's just music that's on. They didn't think, well, let's try to, what is this exactly? What album did this come from? And, you know, a lot of people will blame technology. Oh, well, you can download music. But here's the deal. If you go to iTunes, there's a thing that says buy album $9.99.
Yeah, yeah.
You can do that. So the album still exists.
Yeah, and you know the crazy, I mean, it's about critical thinking skills, and they need guidance, and I always speak about that on all the different shows I've had. I've done the State of Young Black Men, State of Young Black Women, and I always speak about mentoring is so important. I mean, think about when you were young. You may or may not have had somebody there for you, and I'm speaking to the audience. I know you're fortunate enough that, Jason, you had a family, a huge family support system, but a lot of young people don't, and that's why, you know, they are the way they are, and they're making the choices, unbeknownst to them, not realizing there may be another path they're going to take, or, you know, hey, there's an opportunity over here, or like you said, critical thinking, and like, what was that music, and who was playing on there, and what was the name of the album, so on and so forth, you know, and then the best part to do another album even, and maybe I can find some more music like that, you know, that's an important skill that they need guidance with, so...
Yeah, exactly. So, young people, they definitely need more guidance more than ever.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for coming on this evening, and I want to encourage everybody to check you out this Saturday, March 17th in Philadelphia at the Annenberg Center. Check out your Facebook page. Also, check out jasonmartellis.com and follow me on Twitter or check me out on Facebook. I'll be giving away a free copy of his CD, Music Update. Thank you so much, Jason, for coming on this evening.
All right. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Have a nice night. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, follow me on twitter.com/JoyKeys. Become a fan on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. My email address is saturdayswithjoykeys@hotmail.com. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful evening.